WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
The HBO Western Deadwood, which just ended its first season, was noteworthy for the amount and nature of the swearing. According to our linguist Jeff Nunberg, the show managed to get the right effect with the wrong words.
Every age swears differently from the last one. It's as if we have to up the ante every generation or so. As Jonathan Swift once wrote, "Nowadays men change their oaths as often as they change their clothes." That can create problems for the writers of historical fictions. If you have your characters use historically accurate swear words, they're apt to sound no more offensive than your grandmother in a mild snit. The only way to convey the potency of their oaths is to have them use modern swear words, even if they're anachronistic. That's the approach taken by the HBO series Deadwood, which is set in a South Dakota mining camp in the 1870s. As a lot of people have noted, the show is positively swilling in obscenity. The characters use the F-word with a frequency that would make Tony Soprano blush. But the F-word wasn't actually a swear word back then. It was indecent, of course, but people only used it for the sexual act itself. Whereas swear words are the words that become detached from their literal meanings and float free as mere intensifiers. Swearing isn't using the F-word when you're referring to sex. It's using it when you're talking about the weather. In fact, when you look up the word in Jonathan Leiter's Dictionary of American Slang, you discover that the all-purpose insult F-U was a turn-of-the-century creation, and go F yourself isn't attested until 1920. And it wasn't until well into the century that you heard things like, "she effing well better call me," or "get the F out of here." The words those Deadwood characters would actually have used had religious overtones rather than sexual or scatological ones. They would have peppered their speech with goddamn, Jesus, and particularly hell, a word that Americans were famous for using with a dazzling virtuosity. A hell of a drink, what in hell did that mean, hell to pay, the hell you will, hell yes. Back then, those oaths were strong enough to spawn a whole vocabulary of the substitutes that H.L. Mencken called denaturized profanities. Darn, doggone, dadburn, gee whiz, all fired and the like. But those words sound comic to us now. If you put them into the mouths of the characters on Deadwood, they'd all sound like Yosemite Sam. One reason for the shift in swearing was that simple old-fashioned blasphemy doesn't have the same illicit thrill for a secular age. When I was a kid, I was always a little puzzled about the commandment about taking the Lord's name in vain. Not that I didn't know better than to try to say goddamn at the dinner table, but when people list the Ten Commandments, it's hard to see why the profanity rap should get a higher billing than murder, theft, or perjury. That change in attitudes is what drove the soldiers in World War I into the bedroom and bathroom looking for new boundaries to trespass. But that shift was more than a simple change of fashion. The old profanity was a matter of irreverence, using respectable words in disrespectful context. The new obscenity is the opposite of that. It's a kind of linguistic slumming, where we bring unclean words into the rooms at the front of the house. The taboo against profanity comes from on high. The taboo against obscenity comes from within. That shift had a lot to do with the great leveling of swearing in this century. The Victorians liked to think of swearing as a vice endemic to men of the lower orders, swearing like a trooper or swearing like a sailor. Nowadays, swearing isn't a mark of any particular class or gender. Those words are dirty little secrets we can all draw on when we find ourselves in an angry or aggressive mood. You don't find many people nowadays who will tell you that they never swear. Or if they do, they're most likely bragging about their even temper, not their gentility or their piety. The new rituals of swearing have altered the hypocrisy that surrounds it, too. Time was that swear words were completely absent from public discourse, and genteel people could go through their lives pretending that they didn't exist. Nowadays, it's more a question of maintaining an official sanctimony in designated public forums. You can use the F-word in The New Yorker, but not in The New York Times. Bill Maher can swear on HBO, but not on CBS. And Stephen Sondheim can use the S-word in a song in Sweeney Todd when it plays in theaters, but public radio shows are apt to have qualms about playing the song over the air. Of course, we have to draw a line somewhere if swearing's going to have any transgressive force at all. The wonder is that people can defend distinctions like those with a keen moral fervor. The Victorians would have had a hard time understanding how our sense of outrage about swearing can fluctuate according to where we are on the dial.
Jeff Nunberg is a Stanford linguist and author of the new book, Going Nuclear: Language, Politics, and Culture in Confrontational Times.